Podium Publishing presents Flame Touched, written by Brian K. Fuller, performed by Simon Vance. A big thanks to those picture books of saber-toothed tigers I flipped through as a kid, and to Jane Austen's novels I read in college, The Wild and The Civilized, always better together. Prologue. The voice only he could hear started teaching him when he was just a boy. While much of the instruction whispered to him over the years jumbled about in his memory, the first lesson, the very first step in a journey nearing its completion, he would never forget. He had just lifted one of the flat, grey slate stones in the field of one of his father's tenants. 4 peacock beetles scrambled around in the depression, sunlight accenting the delicate purple and green lines on the bulbous carapace of their bodies. Each beetle was the size of a man's thumb, with spindly barbed legs and long antennae flailing in confusion, fumbling to understand the strange change in light and pressure. The soft pricks of the tiny legs didn't bother a boy like him, though he knew his sister wouldn't feel the same. Carefully, he pinched a beetle between his thumb and forefinger and held it up to the sun to get a better look at the purple and green patterns on its back, the lustrous sheen shimmering wherever the sun struck it. He placed the insect in his palm and it circled about, antennae tickling his skin, probing where it might go to escape its confinement. He remembered thinking that a few of the little creatures in his sister's bed would frighten her into enough screaming and yelling to deserve a whipping. Father had made it clear that at all times his children were to control themselves and be civilized, beetles or no. After he had admired the beauty of the peacock beetle a few moments more, the steady, whispering voice spoke for the first time. Crush it. It should have surprised him more, but it almost seemed a part of him, a silent partner that had finally decided to speak up. Oddly, he couldn't recall any effort to disagree or even an attempt to think at all. Perhaps it was because the voice sounded like his own, though it clearly wasn't his mind or his ideas. So, without a second thought, he took the thumb of his other hand and ground the beetle into his palm, its pus like innards popping all over his skin and spattering onto his clothes, mixing with the shattered fragments of its delicate shell. The beauty had fled, replaced by a sloppy goo that was, even to his boyish mind, ugly and revolting. He felt a sense of loss, a wrongness, as if something good had gone. It is only a beetle. Your emotions blind you to its insignificance. Crush another. He pulled another beetle from the depression, this time squeezing his victim between his finger and thumb until it exploded. The antennae continued to wiggle for some time afterward. Odd. Another. Soon he had exhausted his supply of peacock beetles, and by the end of a day spent pulling up slate and destroying the creatures, the sense of loss he had initially felt was gone too. By the end of that week, he had massacred more beetles than he could count. He chopped them in half with knives, pulled their legs off, threw them on hot coals, smeared them into rocks, lined them up and jumped on them one by one, and on, in an endless and macabre roll. Of course, all was done in secret, beyond the watchful gaze of everyone. The voice insisted on secrecy. The lesson was a gift for him alone. He was special. So when it told him to poke the eyes out of a fish, he did it. When it told him to maim a rabbit and throw rocks at it until it was dead, he did it. When it told him to pull the wings off screaming baby birds and feed them to the dogs, he did it. Sometimes it took days, sometimes months, but the voice showed him again and again that he need not feel any remorse for these acts of destruction. Death was a part of life. Feeling sad or guilty for causing it was nonsense. Gutting the family dog when he was 15 set him back in his progress. Its yelps of surprised pain struck an odd nerve within him. The voice berated him for his guilty feelings and he felfelt ashamed. It took 2 more dogs, and one of the hunting hounds before he could slaughter them with equanimity. His father believed a saber cat hunting in the area had done the deeds, and had even set out to track it down. The father invited his son along on the expedition, but the son declined, so he could go to the reeds by the pond and stomp on duck eggs. Of course, he kept up pretenses. Luckily, this took little work. His father punished his sister for her exaggerated weeping and moaning over the dog. The sister sought comfort from the brother, and he gave it. She did not have his understanding, after all, and was to be pitied. She did not comprehend the fundamental impermanence of everything, the power of working with death rather than running from it. She held on to her hope in the eternal flame, an undying relic of the past. She didn't understand that it too could end. The voice told him so. It promised to show him how to do it. When he married, the voice's lessons helped him rid himself of his new bride's annoying pet bird. It was pure white, large and loud, the whole day long. He bashed its head against a rock until it shut up, and then gutted and defeathered it. His cooks had no idea what it was when he brought it to them and had them baste it in butter and serve it as part of dinner. He wanted to laugh as his weepy, whining wife bemoaned her escaped bird while she washed it down with red wine. The voice chastised him for his mirth. Just as there should be no pain in death, there should be no pleasure either. All life came to an end, and it didn't matter at all. His regret returned when he smothered his firstborn child, a delicate boy. Again the voice scolded him and steeled his mind and heart with its stoic inculcations. It required the murder of his secondborn as proof that he had absorbed the lesson. The second child, a girl, was born when winter and the wasting wind beat against the house. After he had smothered her cries, he blamed a servant for leaving the window in the nursery open. His family considered him merciful when he refused to seek any sort of revenge upon the frightened, defensive maid. The voice didn't require her life, and he rarely took the initiative without its prompting. And so, when 4 years ago he had attended court in Belshire, the capital of his nation, Bittermarch, the rhetoric of Ambassador Clout from the nation of Cretus, long antagonistic toward Bittermarch, struck a chord within him. The ambassador claimed the eternal flame, nothing more than a parlour trick meant to help keep the House of Light in power and to lend the Queen a tool for controlling the people. She claimed the flame genuine and unquenchable. The voice knew the truth. Everything ended. Everything. The eternal flame was no trick, but it could be killed just as readily as a beetle or a bird or a dog or a baby. So he went to the ambassador and told him so, confirming the man's carefully reasoned arguments with half-truths he knew he would find attractive. He had an ally. But the time for the quenching had not come. Yet. It took years to set his pieces on the game board and manipulate the already treasonous leanings of some of his peers. He never told them the truth of his purpose, of course. He had relied on seductive arguments that made the nobility feel cheated and less important than others. This was easily done, as they seemed almost eager to feel slighted and exact revenge against their perceived oppressors. The long wait for the final act was nearly over. Ambassador Clout of Cretus moved quickly now. His countrymen starved, and he needed to find a way to take some of Bittermarch's prosperity from them. The voice had started to speak more frequently as the conspiracy prepared to bear fruit. He killed more. He understood the world more. He felt less, as was proper. The unlearned and the ignorant would consider his actions a crime, his aims a heresy. The real crime was that no one understood but him. But when the eternal flame was quenched, when the eternal and unending became mortal and extinguished, the instruction for all would begin. He would make them understand. There was nothing on which one could rely for comfort or hope. Acceptance of the fickle, deadly world just as it was led to true enlightenment and peace. The Cretesians understood this better than Bittermarchians, but even they had not truly grasped it. The voice had elevated him to teacher, and his lessons would come swiftly.